Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. It's great to have you with us today for today's show. It's going to be a super show. This is Allison Rose Levy, and I'm a 20-plus year, not in age, but in amount of time I've been doing it, eco-health journalist, and connecting the dots every week for you here on our program, here on Progressive Radio, between personal health and our total health environment, the health of our communities, of our society, the health of our habitat here on planet Earth. This is the greater context for personal health, which I've been a champion of for over two decades. And this show every week shows the connection between a lot of social policy decisions and a lot of terrific initiatives and the food, water, air, health care, and everything that we need for our health. So each week on Connect the Dots, we bring you a different facet of all of the different dots that form our living web that supports health. And we get to talk to a whole wide range of different people. And I also urge and encourage activism. We begin the show every week, if this is your first time listening, with an action item. And we have other ones usually throughout the program as well where appropriate. Many of you may know I blog on the Huffington Post and newly on Alternet, covering everything on health, food, and the environment and social policy. And you can also find me on my website, healthjournalistblog.com, and on Facebook under Connecting the Dots for Health. So we have a great guest for you on today's program, which I'm so excited to be speaking with her, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that after today's action, with which we begin every show with an action. And this action comes to us from Food Democracy Now. The leaders of Food Democracy Now have been guests on Connect the Dots repeatedly, I'm happy to say, and we also presented a terrific panel together at the recent Brooklyn Food Conference. Now they have a new action. We did a show a couple of weeks back, which you can find in archives, on the California Right to Know. This is the GMO labeling initiative, which will bring give people the right to know what's in their food. It's on the ballot in California. If it wins in November, it means that food products will have to now be labeled so that the public can more easily identify what's in the foods that all of us are eating. And, of course, the majority of people want the right to know and have some concerns about GMOs, which have not really been well tested for their health or environmental effects. But, you know, the big corporations that are invested in them don't want to have people to have the right to know. And as this important California campaign is happening, which you can learn more about by going to the archives and listening to our shows on this. We have a very recent one in the last month or so with Lisa Stocky of Food Democracy Now. There's a new finding that's come up, and we need to take action on it to protect organics and protect foods. Basically, what's happened is that, you know, although these foods have not really been studied, and they are producing more health impacts that are traceable, the industry is wanting, the agricultural industry is wanting to move ahead with more of these genetically engineered crops. And the more that there are, then the more pesticides and toxic chemicals are in use, the more crop damage occurs, and a whole host of other things you can find out about by listening to the show. Lisa Stocky, and also a terrific guest that we had a couple of weeks back who just gave tremendous information on all of this, which I'll also kind of tell you which date that show was in just a minute. But you can find out, it was with Robin O'Brien, I don't want to go into all the details here, but the bad news is that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is kind of quickly green-lighting and fast-tracking the approval of a whole new bunch of crops. In fact, they had a very short public comment time after posting 12 new proposed genetically engineered crops. The comment time has passed. It was yesterday, September 11th. There was really very little time for the USDA scientists with their fast-tracking to properly review GMOs, which have now really come under more and more concern. So Food Democracy Now! Is featuring an action. You can go to their website, fooddemocracynow.org, and under Tell the USDA to Stop Rubber Stamping GMO Crops, you can make your voices heard. This is really very important for all the listeners who are into healthy foods, organic foods, healthy agriculture, and our health, because our, you know, we can't exist apart from healthy foods, really. You know, we can't kind of make a personal choice to eat them as unhealthy foods and damaging chemically ridden toxic agriculture and GMOs become more and more present and proliferating. So I hope you will take action. And now let me turn to today's guest on our show. And I really am excited to be speaking with her because, you know, very often when we talk about how to live a healthy lifestyle, a sustainable lifestyle, an ecological lifestyle, a lot of people immediately imagine that that means, you know, moving to a rural location, you know, often some quiet place and starting to plant a garden. Of course, that's a wonderful thing to do, but a lot of people really are, you know, can't do that or are not about to do that, or even those pristine regions, you know, are becoming toxified. So I love initiatives that bring the sustainable vision to urban areas and to wider populations of people, not just to the lucky few who could move to rural areas or South America or somewhere else, trying to avoid, you know, the kind of problems we're creating for ourselves in this society. And this is a wonderful new project in an urban area, and it really presents a terrific model. So I'm so happy to welcome to today's Connect the Dots Anandi Premlal, who's a grassroots activist and the founder of a social movement to create a sustainable Queens. Now, sustainable Queens, what is that? It's not the Queens, you know, with the crowns. The Queens that Anandi is working to make sustainable and promote and protect is actually a borough of New York City. New York has five boroughs. Brooklyn, Manhattan is the big one. These are the big two you usually hear about. But Queens is also a very thriving and interesting, diverse community, and that is where Anandi lives and focuses her attention. So we're going to be learning all about that on today's Connect the Dots. Welcome, Anandi.
Wilson.
Hi.
Hi. So, I just want to say thank you for that incredible intro.
Well, I'm really interested to hear about it as a New York resident. And let me just make sure, because I know we're going to be referring to this, Sustainable Queens is the name of your movement, but you refer to it in its online presence is, now how do you pronounce this, SUSDQ? Or
SUSDQ.
SUSDQ.
Yeah. Something short.
So, you know, usually, you know, I'm so happy for what you're doing because underserved communities are not always welcomed into, you know, or places not really made or created or assured for them always into the health and sustainable lifestyles that, you know, I've been promoting for so many years. And this represents an initiative for that kind of support and inclusion. So I'm really delighted to see this happening. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing.
Okay. Well, this has been a dream of mine for some time. And finally, I mean, I did start some programs to bring people out to local parks to help clean up. So it's work I've been doing for a few years already. And, you know, had that mentality since I was, you know, born in Guyana. We lived on, you know, a farm that was home right across the beach that and grew organic food before it was organic. So this, you know, all ties down from ancestral memory and to lifestyle. But then living here and growing up in Queens, New York, I always felt this lack and longing for, you know, for these roots, literally, and and to connect back in some way. And, you know, just observing the community, seeing what could be done, seeing if there's not really any initiatives that have been taken as yet, not on this level. And decided, you know, this year we built a little greenhouse in the backyard to grow our own, you know, fresh local vegetables, and that's our way to counter Monsanto, and to show people too that you don't have to have, you know, a huge yard. We don't even have any dirt or grass, and this is all, you know, container, and then we built up raised beds. So that's one way we're, you know, showing the locals that, you know, okay, we can do this, you know, mm-hmm. even if you don't have the space, mm-hmm. or think that you don't have the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are also, you know, having, you know, we have a lot of events where, you know, we are bringing people out to parks, to, you know, nature centers to show them that, you know, the beauty of nature and about conservation, and then also speaking a lot about health and wellness. We have, we're part of some Ayurvedic nutrition classes in the community, and teaching, you know, how to make ghee, how to cook vegetables, like, very healthy, like, what the difference is between buying at the local market, which we're not really sure where these foods are coming from, and then buying or, you know, or learning, even better, learning to grow maybe even just, like, one or two herbs, spices, or vegetables. You know, that's part of how we're connecting with the people here. And then, you know, there are other movements that we have that will be folding out in 2013 in terms of bringing more, like physically bringing more healthy food to the community.
Do you have school nutrition programs and that kind of thing, community gardens programs, or is this really the kinds of things that happen in other urban areas? Is this just beginning in Queens, because it kind of got left out a little bit?
Right. This is beginning in this part of Queens in particular. This is southern Queens and southeastern Queens, which covers the areas which people probably never hear about, like South Oakland Park, Richmond Hill, Jamaica, even, you know, as far as Far Rockaway, and some parts of Ozone Park. And we're also partnering with areas in Forest Hills. And the funny thing is, between working with, you know, both SUSDQ and the Queensway, is that it looks like Queens has a lot of open green space, but actually doesn't. You know, like Forest Park is extremely wooded, Flushing Meadows Park, which is more in the northern part of Queens, north central part of Queens, is, you know, built on swamp and, you know, really great, you know, space, but in that particular area. But if you look on the map, you know, of Queens, like, you know, on the southeast side, it's extremely blank.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in Queens myself, actually. I grew up in northern Queens. But, you know, used to take the bus to tell listeners a little bit about the community that you have there, the population that you have there, because I think Queens is actually a bit of an unknown territory, I think, to a lot of New Yorkers, and certainly to our national audience. You know, one of the things that I love so much about New York City is the diversity. You know, it's known as the nation's melting pot, and it still is, and so a melting pot, and it's a place where really it's kind of like a big soup where people can learn, you know, to connect with and meet up with other people from other cultures and other ways. And so kind of rather than battening down the hatches and just saying, you know, my group alone is the best, which is, I think, a natural human tribal tendency, in a place where there are a lot of different cultures intermingling, there's a wonderful opportunity to learn to see the humanity, you know, across all of these lines that unfortunately too often divide. So I have a feeling, I know Brooklyn is very rich with all that, and I know Queens is it too. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. Queens is definitely the most diverse borough of all, and I think it's probably the most diverse place on Earth. Which makes it very special, because it being the most, having so many different cultures, so many different communities here. And Queens is particular because we won't say we're just from Queens. We'll say, I'm from South Oakland Park, I'm from Jamaica, I'm from Astoria, I'm from Long Island City. So we're very territorial. in terms of our neighborhoods and where we are. And each little neighborhood has a particular culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like in, you know, the part of Queens that I live in, it's very Indo-Caribbean, South Asian, Caribbean, you know, overall Latino, and it's beautiful. And you go and you step, out into, the different areas, there will be, other communities you can connect with. And the food is just incredible because you will get very authentic, really great tasting food. So Queens is definitely a place to visit. And I just think that, maybe probably because of that and being immersed in, so much diversity and so much culture, it enhances the worldly view, that we are all in this together and we all are facing similar issues. When I was going for my Master Composter certification at Queens Botanical Garden, part of my project there, and I'm still working on it, is to create compost guides in various languages, illustrated guides in various languages to work with the diverse communities. Because composting is something that happens more naturally in other countries, but here in the urban areas, it's something that's somewhat feared. Because of the smell or rodents or just, again, the
bugs.
The bugs. And the big issue here with New York overall is space. It's like, how could I possibly do this? But we find, ways that you can do this and you can, use your organic food waste in a productive way and create incredibly rich organic compost that you can use in your garden or make compost cookies for street trees, things like, so those are things that initiatives that we're looking to do more in the community and inform them about.
So you have a lot of activities that are educational and community building and also just give people, extend the range of skills that they have available to live in a more healthful and sustainable way. That sounds really great.
Absolutely.
Tell our listeners a little bit about the Queensway Project, which is another one of your initiatives.
Okay, the Queensway Project came together last year, but it's been a dream for a few other communities. And we all saw this over 50-year-old Long Island Railroad. It's actually the Long Island Rockaway Beach Branch that has been disused or abandoned for over 50 years. And I used to live right across from it, so I saw it every day. And I was like, wow, wouldn't it be great if I could just walk up there and go all the way to Forest Park? And in this area, Queens is beautiful, but transportation can be somewhat of an issue, especially public transportation. And even safe places to walk or ride because there are so many cars. And, so I thought, having this place right across the block, right across from me would be absolutely amazing. I could go to Forest Park every day, go do my grocery shopping at Trader Joe's, and started doing some research and, submitted the idea to the Institute for Urban Design when they had a call for ideas last spring. Was able to present about it at the Queens Museum of Art, had the idea published in the Institute for Urban Design's book on the future, ideas for the future of New York City. I think it's called Atlas for Ideas. And then last August, I was written up in a local paper, and other community members who were working on a similar, who had a similar vision reached out to me. They're like, let Anandi know that she's not alone and that we can team up and do this together. And we formed the steering committee last December, have since partnered with the Trust for Public Land. And now we're working on raising $500,000 for a feasibility report.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So that will
ambitious.
Be able. That's the first step in being able to find out what we can and can't do with this space, and this would give us about 8 acres of cultural community green space, and the landscape is extremely diverse, which is very fitting for Queens, because on the northern end it's below grade, so you could look down, on it almost like a canyon. And then as you're coming further south, it becomes more dirt-packed and street-level, And where I am in, you know, in the south, it's raised, so it looks similar to the High Line, where it is above ground, and you could see it there. So it's a very, you know, extremely exciting project, you know, since we have an extremely power-packed team that's working on it. And and it's just, you know, very, very exciting. It's, you know, it's a long-term project, of course. And, you know, looking at ways that we can incorporate, you know, various programs and, you know, definitely the arts and wellness along the different ways, along the different paths of it. So it's not just going to be like one continuous space. There will be, you know, various hubs in the different areas, and also to create a 3.5 mile path, you know, for bikes, for walking, for recreation.
Wow, that's amazing.
And looking to connect that with other greenways and pathways that are running through Queens, like the Brooklyn Queens Greenway, and then also the Eastern Greenway. And there is a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous national park, Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge. Mm-hmm. And we would be able to connect to that, you know, as well. It's where all the birders go to watch watch incredible natural life. It's very peaceful. If you haven't been there, it's definitely one of the hidden gems of Queens.
Mm, that's fantastic. Wow. So, you know, this is really, it's interesting because one of my constant themes is that we need to take personal action, but we also need to take community action, and we need to take society-wide action. So, and all three levels are really crucial to maintaining health and a healthy habitat. And at the beginning of the program, you know, the GMO action on the social policy level will impact the kind of foods that are grown and that we have available on the community and local level. And in the same, and your programs are really a model of community action. And you just kind of took it upon yourself to develop this. And, you know, one of the things that really interests me about this is what I see a lot of are people who are kind of, what can I do? And, you know, there's not much I can really do here. And, you know, my hands are tied. I'm just kind of living the life I'm living, and how can I make a difference kind of thing. And yet you have a terrific sense of just kind of plunging in and organizing, making a difference. I mean, how do you go about, you know, kind of getting support and gathering people and, you know, kind of building teams and communities to go down these kinds of pathways?
Well, one of the tools that we've been instrumental in using is social media. And, you know, we have a very active Facebook page. We just hit 1,000 likes a couple days ago. And so we're active on Twitter, now on Google Plus, and it's all at, you know, SysDQ. And we, you know, we have an international following. One of the beautiful parts about, you know, learning about this and connecting and also being worldly and, you know, just, again, showing everyone that we are, you know, facing similar challenges no matter where we are in the world. You know, I could be from, you know, this little part in southern Queens, but I get messages just about, you know, every week from new friends that I've made across the world, you know, some in Germany in particular, saying, you know, that our Facebook page is so inspiring. It's helping her to, you know, transition into the career and the passion that she wants to do versus, you know, her corporate job. And I was like, wow, you know, a Facebook page can do that. So, you know, being able, you know, putting the information out there, just showing, you know, being, I guess, having a positive influence. Because I feel like you could, there's, you know, different paths you can take in the environmental realm. And I guess in general, and you could, you know, promote things, you know, with either love or fear. Which is also very Buddhist, and you know, I've taken the, you know, more of a nurturing approach in terms of outreach. And I find that that works very well because, you know, just like everyone, like having that little bit of an extra boost every day or just showing the beauty of nature, you know, that's out there, you know, the biodiversity, like these gorgeous dragon-type slugs that I've never even seen before. or even turtles hatching eggs. I mean, you know, we that's not something I get to see every day here in Queens, but it's something that's happening somewhere, you know, around the world or in another state. And different, you know, it's just so beautiful to see people connect on that and and the conversations that they have with each other. And I think, you know, and I get, you know, just various, you know, the messages are just, they inspire me, you know, how, you know, now they, you know, wanted to plant, we ordered some daffodils, which, New Yorkers for Parks gives out every year to honor 9/11, the 9/11 heroes, and we ordered some, and we promoted, you know, we're like, you know, everyone, you can go out and order some daffodils and plant them, and, you know, someone just wrote me, you know, back yesterday that, you know, she ordered some to honor a friend of hers, and they're doing it with their, her old high school group, you know, out here in Queens. And
how funny.
And you know, so I get to see, you know, and people write and they comment and they, you know, just tell me like how that little bit, like, you know, they're taking action. They want trees here. Like, how can I get some fruit trees? How can I do this? So it's really awakening a lot of, I feel, what of our, what the huge immigrant community here has been missing, you know, from their homeland. And it's really wonderful to be able to connect and try to do that here. Not just try, we are doing it. And
you know, that's interesting what you say there, Anandi, because, you know, a lot of the cultures, I mean, the, you know, in some segments of society, there's a lot of fear or a sense of entitlement around, you know, being a Native American. Of course, you know, the Native Americans have really been sharing this land with all of us who emigrated here from other places, you know. But, you know, there's a sense of a kind of, you know, I got in and, you know, who are these new people kind of thing. But what you're, which, you know, I mean, I personally think that's very misguided for a whole bunch of different reasons. But one of the things that you're pointing out is that people that come from other cultures, come from island cultures, like the people in Queens population that you're mentioning, are actually closer to a lot of these roots. And then when they come here, when they come here to join family, when poverty drives them to come here and other things, they have to give up the more earth-centered connection to the land and their food and all the rest of it that they traditionally enjoyed in their usual, you know, in their cultures that they came from. So what you're describing is both a gift to this country when people come who have some, you know, are closer to that and can remind us, and also it helps them literally transplant and nurture themselves and others by putting down not just roots as in I came here and I got a place to live and a, you know, sort of some kind of Joe job, but real physical roots in the earth, and to replenish that, you know, as they do it. That's actually both helps them contribute and participate here to our country, and you know, it's great on so many different levels. And also, you know, they can also be reminded, because they're kind of a little closer to it maybe than some folks who've been here for a longer time. And so that's really wonderful. We're going to have to take a break for station identification here on Connect the Dots. We'll be coming back for the second half of our show with Anandi Premlal talking to us about sustainable Queens. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Please stay with us for the second half of Connect the Dots on the Progressive Radio Network. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, back with you here. We're doing a show about sustainable community action with Anande Prem Lal, who has been spearheading a wonderful initiative in Queens, New York. Queens is one of the five boroughs of New York City, and her project and allied projects under the umbrella Sustainable Queens, or SUSTQ. We've been discussing all the terrific ways to educate, initiate, engage, and involve diverse populations in an urban environment, in living life in a healthful and sustainable manner. And of course, you know, no matter how urban the environment, even if it's not, you know, acres and miles of rolling hills and all of that, even urban environments do abut water, do have air, do have areas of garden and land and swamp and all the rest of it, so it's not just paved over like one big parking lot. And so, you know, there are opportunities there for home sustainable permaculture, for experiencing nature. It's not something, you know, we think about in quite the same way, for sharing in doing that. It's not the same thing, perhaps, as how we might do this in a large urban area, but because large rural areas, you know, also have problems, whether it's mountaintop coal removal or fracking, or, you know, other environmentally toxifying or endangering things. I think there's real value in building sustainable initiatives in urban environments, both so more people can participate, because many people live in urban environments, and also because I think I think that even to protect rural environments, the more that we have engaged people in large urban populations really understanding and valuing our habitat here on Earth, the more that we can do that on this kind of social policy levels where we need to take action to protect health and the environment. So I really salute what you're doing, Anande. So let's go back to that conversation, and I just want to let listeners know, if you've enjoyed the first half of the show, that you can find the initiative on the internet at sustyq.com. That's S-U-S-T-Y-Q, just the capital Q, .com, and that's short for Sustainable Queens. It's also on Facebook, facebook.com/SUSTQ, and actually quite a nice large number of people participating there. And one of the things that you were talking about in the first half of the show is how you engage on multiple levels, both within the community and via social media. And you know, how do you see the interaction there? Because I think that's an interesting nexus point that some people understand, some people are seeking to understand better. You're obviously finding the ways to connect the two. I mean, what are your thoughts or strategies about that, Anande?
I mean, I know social media can still seem a little strange to some, because it's this, you know, time wasting or just difficult, or it takes too much information, and with all the info scares out there right now, I can understand why some are hesitant about it. But I found that, you know, as with everything, there are the positives and the negatives, and I think the positives far outweigh whatever else is out there, and that's what we're focusing on. I find that, you know, I do some social media consulting as well, and if anybody and have done so with our, you know, SUSTQ tribe, to be able to show them, okay, you know, this is how you post, or, you know, how you connect or you share, or learning to tag, and it's a way to, you know, I feel like online community building is, you know, a really incredible method to connect, not just on this local level, because you can do that, and it's, you know, it's simple to, I don't want to say that it's too simple, but it's, you know, you can gather your neighbors and others to come out, you know, to a park and or a beach, or, you know, to plant, to clean up or to plant trees and do something like that. But to get them to, you know, take action online or to commit to that or to read, you know, which is one of the beautiful parts of social media, it requires reading.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think that we forget. And, you know, we post a lot of articles, food recipes, you know, just a lot of really great things and actions as well, you know, letting people know, like, what's going on, you know, within the community. Here's another park, like Flushing Meadows Park, which is going to, you know, be going up through, you know, developers because they want to take it over, you know. And so, you know, letting people know, like, when those meetings are, you know, are going on and, you know, what other, you know, things that, you know, come across my way, people will send me, you know, events, and it's a great way to promote those. You know, just whatever else is going on. Like, there's a really great intergenerational garden started by another Indo-Caribbean woman, Maureen Reagan, at Queens Botanical Garden. And so she has seniors working there and then teaching high schoolers. And the garden itself is very immigrant and very diverse in its food. So you'll have, you know, Japanese vegetables. You'll have, like, Indian-style vegetables. And
Oh, my gosh.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds fantastic.
It's beautiful. And they had a little garden party celebration just about a week and a half ago. And, you know, just very beautiful from having the West Indian tassa drumming to dancing to, you know, just sharing, you know, in the fresh harvest.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, it's interesting because I'm sure you've thought about this a little, but, although we've never spoken about it, but I'm curious if you have. I would bet you have because, you know, on the one hand, there's kind of a sense of, you know, of wanting to be a purist and sort of keeping things, you know, preserving traditional cultures, preserving things in their most pristine and traditional form. On the other hand, in nature, nature likes diversity. I mean, one of the concerns about maintaining life here in our habitat on planet Earth is that we are, through human activities, and I'm not speaking of climate change here, but I'm speaking of, you know, the various agricultural, industrial, and consumer toxins and toxic chemicals that we introduce into use, which, you know, they don't just end up in us, although they do. They don't just end up in our homes, although they do. But, you know, ultimately they are recycled and, you know, in a negative kind of sense into planet Earth, and they have an effect on other species, plant, insect, animal, you know, and we've, one of the phenomena of our time, along with, on a global level, along you know, with the changes in climate, which I think have been pretty obvious this summer, has been a loss of the diversity of species. And there's a kind of having diverse species, I mean, it has so many different, it meets so many needs. I mean, for one thing, it's like a backup plan to have different species. For another, it's like having more creative options for adaptation and survival and creativity to have different species. So, you know, there's a whole kind of survival-oriented richness. You know, nature loves diversity, and through our toxification, we're kind of losing that. But what's so interesting is that you have diversity there, and all you're telling our listeners about on an ecological level in terms of, you know, the Japanese and the Indian vegetable preferences and wisdoms about how to cook them and everything, growing side by side. And you, but, you know, also, so you have diversity in even food selections there. And you also have diversity in people and in cultures. And, you know, that, I mean, so this is really, from a purist standpoint, we might want everyone to be homogenous and just like us. But from a diversity, you know, from a survival standpoint, nature really celebrates diversity. I would love to hear your own ruminations on that.
I think that it completely, it literally feeds off itself. I mean, the diversity, the biodiversity, the food, the plants, nature, everything, because everything that we put out there in terms of whatever products we use comes back into our bodies and then goes back out into our oceans, into our air. And even, you know, building and maintaining a safe and healthy home environment is important. You know, I was reading Green America and learning how to do that, and I had an instance where my PVC shower curtain made me faint. And my, you know, the toxic chemical that I was using, it was like a Swiffer product, made me faint as well. Like the combination of those two made me unhealthy, and it started to make me realize that, you know, it really is important, you know, what products, you know, we use. And it doesn't have to be something that's ridiculously expensive. A lot of what we use can be as simple as lemon and baking soda and vinegar, you know. So, and I think a lot of this, you know, the biodiversity, you know, plays into that, as well as, like, what we're planting, what we're growing in our communities. Because, you know, some of the issues that have been going on, because I'm also part of organizations like the Relief Committee, and so I'm aware of pests that have been introduced into America here that are destroying some of our trees, like the Asian longhorn beetle, you know, and the emerald ash borer. And those types of pests help are spread more easily, those diseases are spread more easily when you plant the same trees along blocks and blocks and blocks. So if we had, you know, more diversity in the types of trees that were planted, you know, when the city was, you know, mapped out, that could have, you know, that issue could have been curbed a lot more. So going forward, like with Million Trees, and which is a program that I work with as well, in terms of repopulating and then also getting some fruit trees out to communities, you know, looking at what, you know, what is native, you know, what are we going to plant here? How do we keep, you know, more, you know, various, you know, various types of trees in the community? And, you know, some of them, you know, people want ornamental or beautiful trees. You can have that. They are, you know, really gorgeous items, and it's not to say that you cannot, you know, have something that's beautiful, but there is beauty in this diversity. And even in, you know, wildflowers. My friend Marielle with New York City Wildflower Week, she, you know, is always speaking about how, you know, important it is to plant and nurture the native species that we have here. And I'm constantly surprised at how many are just dying out and how many, you know, if you looked at, you know, if you just walked upon an empty patch, you know, whether you're in Queens here or anywhere else, you know, in the world, what do you see? Most people see just, okay, some green stuff, maybe some grass. But there's hundreds of different plant species there that we don't even pay attention to. And, you know, there's organizations right now, which I'm really excited about, 596 Acres, which is helping to identify a lot of these empty spaces and lots that, you know, community groups and, you know, individuals who are interested in doing something green or sustainable in their community, they can take over, you know, these pieces of land, which is very valuable, and and do something, you know, with it, plant something, or even if you're, you know, nurturing, you know, wildflowers there or some, you know, something, doing something that's, you know, going to benefit not just yourself, but also the community and the earth. You know, I think all those elements are key in terms of our survival and part of sustainable wellness.
I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, covering health and everything for so many years that I would often hear is, you know, from people, you know, is, oh, you know, when they reconnect with some of the principles of integrative health, they'll say something like, oh, you know, my my Chinese grandmother, you know, used to make teas, and she, mm-hmm. you know, would heal with food and knew how to do that. You know, there. Oh, gee, yeah. In the, you know, Caribbean island where I came from, you know, we just naturally, we would eat this or drink that, or if you were coming down with a cold, you know, we would, I remember somebody once told me about some incredible, you know, hot bath with drinking a certain kind of spicy rum drink to sort of, you know,
fun.
Knock out the, an incipient flu. And you know, I, of course I tried it and it worked, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of, so I'm wondering also if the connection you were speaking of between the generations, you know, giving the elders instead of kind of looking at them askance and, oh, well, you know, you're not a native English speaker. You may speak with an accent. Maybe your English isn't as perfect as someone who was born and educated here throughout their whole life. But, you know, they may have a different kind of wisdom. I mean, do you see any of that kind of thing showing up in those encounters? Or
I do. And the intergenerational aspect and, you know, caring for our elders is something that's very rooted in my culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my generation, you know, generations back, I have ancestry in India, and so mm-hmm. we're very family-oriented and also mm-hmm. look at, you know, the elders for their wisdom, for their stories, for, you know, all this learning that, that you don't find, you know, anywhere else. You might find it in some books, but not, you know, not as quite the same, and in the accents and, you know, with the funny, you know, little stories that are attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a cousin of mine that's, you know, spending some time at the senior home here. That's been her summer summer internship. And, you know, she goes and she sings with them and she listens to their stories and she's surprised that, you know, just how funny and entertaining, you know, it can be. So this is a 16-year-old mm-hmm. who's, you know, connecting with elders on this level. So that's one thing we absolutely encourage. And I think, you know, one of the, I was in Toronto taking care of my grandparents earlier this summer and finding that there is this disconnect when we, you know, when we come to these countries that, you know, we're thinking, you know, because somebody told them that margarine was better than the butter that, you know.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Having to, like, learn to reprogram that, like, no, you know, this is, you know, better for you. And mm-hmm. or even the white bread that was introduced, you know, because that, you know, seemed like a more affluent product to have versus the artisan, you know,
mm-hmm.
Food that was baked, you know, within the community or by your aunt or grandma or mom. So mm-hmm. we've, you know, learning more to, you know, really, really go back, you know, to these roots and learning about just like learning how to cook just a little something on
mm-hmm.
your own, because the food and the preservatives and the things that are out there right now are affecting our health. I mean, the obesity crisis that's going on right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's very tied in, you know, to our food and to what's being grown and
mm-hmm.
what's being put into the soil and the
mm-hmm.
pesticides and the products. I mean, I could go off on that for a while. But, again,
no, it's
like
very
our,
true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, our elders didn't even have to face this, you know, growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, our soil has been depleted so much, so we're eating somewhat of the same food, but we're still not getting the same nutrients.
Yeah, it looks
I'm
the
sure.
same. It's shaped like a tomato.
Right.
It's
mm-hmm.
shaped, but it doesn't contain the same minerals, the same nutrients. You know, it isn't actually the same. In fact, as we're doing the show, and we're coming near the end of our hour here, so we don't have time to go into it too extensively, but there was a study done at Stanford University, put out on to National Public Radio, and then picked up by the media, New York Times, et cetera, basically debunking the health value of organic foods. And actually, this was, when I heard it, I immediately suspected when I heard it was a study, you know, a meta-study that looked at a bunch of studies and included others, I suspected that it was kind of a cooked study.
Mm-hmm.
And more is coming out now that in fact it is, because it didn't properly quantify the toxicity and pesticides in conventional produce. It didn't properly study the higher nutrient value and deal with the issues of nutrient depletion. It excluded, you know, 30 years of USDA data on this. And so now a lot of voices are rising up. But, you know, the media was standing there ready to just kind of take the word of one university, underwritten by Stanford, underwritten by Cargill, a major GMO proponent, to kind of bring our show a little bit full circle here. So even when we hear science quoted, when we hear things in the press, you know, there's a kind of a little bit of a tug of war going on in terms of what constitutes a healthy food context, you know. And a healthy food context will determine what we all eat, you know.
And this all ties back into the power of social media.
Right.
And how, you know, if there's sometimes I have a question, you know, or if I even put up a status, I'm feeling sick, I'll get 20 different remedies,
right.
You know, put up there. But then also if I also post, oh, this is a late, this is how you identify a GMO from these, you know, numbers on the fruit, I'll have someone who's an expert, you know, they'll come on because, you know, and say, no, that's not, that's false. This is, you know, and there will be debates. You know, over what's going on, over the truth or over the validity. And things have been pointed out, you know, to me because I don't claim to know everything. And it's really great to see that there are others who are, you know, more informed and they're willing to share this information. And it's an incredible space to do so, you know, and it's public.
Right.
Anyone can participate and we all, you know, see this and definitely, you know, share it. Like Twitter is where you can, you know, gather a lot of this info and meet with, you know, like-minded individuals, and then, you know, I take a lot of this, what I learned there, and put it, you know, break it down and put it on someplace like Facebook.
Right.
And make it, you know, just very, you know, how, you know, and I'm always thinking, like, how do I make things accessible to the general community, both, you know, on a virtual level and a local level?
Right, exactly. So we're coming down to the end of the show, but this is kind of like, you know, all of the bugs and the worms and the things that help digest. We're also sharing in a garden of information, and the theme of this show, the musical theme, is actually The Garden by Bobby McFerrin. So we're all in a garden of the earth, a garden of culture, a garden of information that we can learn and benefit and exchange and dialogue, you know, among ourselves and with others and become more diverse and better informed and thereby healthier and become cultivators and activators of the healthy on earth. So I want to thank you so much, Anandi Premlal of Sustainable Queens, for being with me today and Connect the Dots. And thank you so much. You've been, it's been fun talking to you. And thank you, listeners, for being with us. And please stay tuned next week at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network for the next edition of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Thanks for being with us today.